Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Off the Bench. I'm Gianni.
Hey, I'm Praz.
And what a week it's been, Praz, in FPL. Haaland blank, but the City juggernaut keeps on going. Another disappointing performance from Man United. Penalty drama aplenty with Salah and Enzo missing and Watkins and Saka giving up theirs. Chelsea continue to stutter. In fact, many of the players who returned well in game week one didn't do quite so well in game week two. But Praz, how was your game week?
Game week was a little bit of a roller coaster, right? I mean, played Turner in goal, which is obviously a little bit unnerving, benching Pickford, but turned out okay. The defense, you know, last week was returned some points with assists. We didn't get many clean sheets this time as well, except for the Saliba clean sheet last night. And I know that's something that you will talk about. And then Estupiñán does amazingly yet again. And, you know, the guy continues to make a mockery out of his 5 million price. Midfield, I think we'll talk a lot about midfield this week and, you know, a lot of disappointment with the Arsenal and the Man United boys. But, you know, the 6.5 mids like Mbeumo and Mitoma keep doing well. And then the big talking point in terms of forwards, Haaland blanked, proving that he's human after all. And then I had João Pedro, who disappointed. How was your week?
Yeah, similar to yours, ups and downs. And when we see the game week go from a Friday to a Monday, we see ups and downs aplenty. Don't check your rank mid-game week is my advice to FPL managers. There I was on Sunday, sitting quite pretty. I think I was around on a big green arrow, around 200K. I finished up around 600K because my Monday night football experience wasn't the best. And I didn't have Saliba, and I think he cost me Gabriel's single point again. Definitely on the chopping block for me. And I think Gabriel owners will all be looking for replacements this week. But other than that, it was a good game week. I had some of those template wins, like, you know, your 6.5 midfielder and Watkins picked up some points. But for me, it was Foden was the standout. And we'll speak more about Man City in a minute. But Foden's 9 points were a really nice differential swing for me. And again, you could argue a little bit unfortunate. So you picked up 9, which is brilliant, and we take those 9 points. But he could have had a 15, 20 pointer. So many chances created. Stepping into kind of the KDB role so well. And I guess that's where we should start this game week, because Man City was super impressive, Praz.
They were. And, you know, without De Bruyne, without Gundogan, you know, they're still proving to be a good side. Now, the underlying attacking numbers are a little bit low. I mean, in fact, if you look at the Newcastle game, that was the lowest XG underlying attacking data that they've created in a home game for over a year. But I think you have to look at it by the fact that everyone owns Haaland. So if you want a piece of that Man City attack, you have to look at somebody like an Alvarez or a Foden, who will have a lot more minutes now that, you know, the said midfielders like Gundogan and KDB are out.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I do wonder, moving forward, can we count on Foden and Alvarez for guaranteed minutes? And the answer is no, but can we count on one of them? Yes, we can, I think. With no Gundogan, no KDB, no Mahrez. Obviously, Bernardo Silva was out at the weekend, which really helped their cause for starting in game week two. But they did both start game week one, and both these guys have had 180 minutes so far. But can we absolutely count on them, knowing there'll be additions at Man City and Doku will come in and play a lot on the right-hand side? Probably not, but I still think for the short term, we can jump on either of these guys and hope for immediate returns, because their game week fixtures from three onwards still look quite pretty. I mean, I'm a Foden owner, so I'm probably not interested in Alvarez. I'm thinking more probably a Man City defender will be my third Man City asset. As I mentioned, I'm looking for a Gabriel replacement. But if given the choice, as do you have a preference over Alvarez versus Foden? Because they're playing in such a similar role, similar price point, although maybe buying a forward's a little bit easier than buying a midfielder?
Well, yes. So I think you've made the right point there, where people have a space in the forward line, maybe people with João Pedro or maybe even a Watkins that want to downgrade, whereas in midfield, they're pretty stacked up. But I think Foden is the better pick. Now, whether you do it this week or next week comes down to your particular midfield. So, for example, in my case, I've got the double Arsenal midfield, the double Man United midfield, who both have amazing fixtures this week, Nottingham Forest and Fulham at home. So I'm of the mind that if I wanted to go for one this week, I would probably go Alvarez. But if I want somebody for long term, I think Foden's the pick, which is why I'll come to my team and my plans. But I think I'm more leaning towards, let's wait a week. Let's give the Man United and Arsenal guys another week. And then we see if we jump on Foden or not. Because I think the tactical switch from Man City that has happened because they don't have a clear right winger without Bernardo and Mahrez is that Kyle Walker is actually bombing up forward quite a bit. And what that means is Foden doesn't have to hug the touchline, which he used to have to do when he played on the right wing or the left wing. So he's actually as central as you want. And yeah, he will be in a lot of points and he's very exciting.
Yeah, I was looking at the average position map, and And Kyle Walker on the right-hand side was almost opposite Jack Grealish on the left-hand side. You know, okay, the right back is as advanced as the left winger. And that was the case. They were City's two wide men. And then Foden and Alvarez can both be fairly central, feeding the big man up top. And even with being provider, with no Gundogan and no KDB, you know, Foden and Alvarez are the two set-piece takers as well, which definitely adds to their threat. So yeah, I think there's definitely a case to be bringing in a Man City player, either game week 3 or 4. But also the defence, Praz, like, many of us didn't start the season with a Man City defender. And for some, that was because they wanted to go a player like John Stones. He was in my draft all pre-season, but with the injury news, we took him out. But seeing how Man City have performed at the back in the first couple of game weeks, there's a big argument to say, if you're looking for a Gabriel replacement, look no further than a Man City defender. And Guardiola at 5 million, even Akanji looks like he's becoming a nailed asset. And then obviously the most nailed of all, but slightly more expensive, is Diaz. You don't get the upside with City defenders anymore. Like, João Cancelo's not a thing. But I still think for the clean sheet guarantee that you get with City over any other team in the Premier League, really, the best defence in the league, perhaps we should just go for a long-term glue guy in a Guardiola or a Diaz.
Yeah, I think there's very few defenders in the game that provide that defensive security of clean sheet points. But then what you're trying to get is, can I get the attacking threat? Which is why people went for the Estupiñans, the Chilwells, even the James. And so, yes, if you're comparing it with an Arsenal defender, I don't think Saliba or Gabriel, even if he was starting, have the same attacking output. So between the two, I prefer City a lot. The question is, which City? I mean, you know, Akanji right now, as you mentioned, is being trusted a little bit more because Stones is out and, you know, he needs a defender to come into midfield a bit more, and Akanji does that really well. Walker is playing this role of bombing forward, as we talked about, really well. Guardiola has started well, but then Ake is still there. So yes, if you wanted sort of as close to 100% surety on minutes, I think Diaz is the guy. But if you wanted to get somebody for 5 million, I think it's okay to go for an Akanji or a Guardiol or even a Walker. But I'd be skeptical on that just because of the limited upside on the other guys and the fact that Champions League is coming, international break, and, you know, Carabao Cups are coming. It's just a little difficult for me to justify going for a low upside pick, even though they have this great, you know, underlying defensive data.
Yeah, I hear that. And what about Newcastle, obviously City's opponents? You mentioned earlier, Praz, the low XG from Man City, and it just shows how good Newcastle have been at the back since Eddie Howe's come in. And last season, statistically, they're up there in the top sort of 2-3 defences in the league alongside Man City. But it's probably more of the same so far what we've seen this season. It's just been tough fixtures. When the fixtures turn, we're all going to want a Newcastle defender, aren't we?
Absolutely. I'm very big on Newcastle defense. And, you know, all of a sudden we've forgotten one of the best players in the game last year, Trippier, but even 4.5 Botman is a great option in defense. I really think after Liverpool and Brighton away is done, so that's game week 3 and game week 4, they go on a great run, which is Brentford, Sheffield United, Burnley, West Ham, Crystal Palace, Wolves. I think a lot of people will jump on Newcastle defenders. And I particularly am eyeing up Trippier even as early as next week, if I can make the money work. Because of that old, you know, what we talked about, which is upside defenders are very few. And if you can get on a few of them, I think they provide much better value. I'm very big on Trippier.
Yeah, I hear that. And what about Man United, Praz? Because you were big on United preseason, that is Bruno and Rashford owners. You know, I own Rashford. You own the pair, right?
I do.
Yeah. So, okay. So they're putting up the data, like the underlying stats are there, but the output hasn't necessarily been there. But the fixtures are there. So whilst we're going to speak about loads of good midfielders in this game that we want to buy that perhaps we can't stretch to, do you stay patient with Rashford and Bruno given the fact they play Nottingham Forest at home? Are you planning on keeping them both for that fixture?
I definitely am. But I also understand that it's a little bit team dependent. I mean, there's other teams out there that are on 2 free transfers, have no other fires. Maybe they avoided Gabriel, they avoided Stones and James, and, you know, they're happy with their forward line. I completely get if they want to sort of move off a Bruno or a Rashford to a Foden or a Madison, if he's fit. We'll talk about Madison. So I get it. I think, you know, Nottingham Forest at home on paper looks a good fixture, but actually Nottingham Forest in the first 2 game weeks have been really, really solid defensively, which is unlike them from last season. So it could just be a statistical anomaly. One of the games was Sheffield United, who are anyway poor. But I think the game looks better on paper than it actually is. And then you have Man United. So for me, who already owns them, and I have other fires, It's very easy for me to say, look, hold your Man United players. It's fine. It's Nottingham Forest at home. Other people, if they're better placed, I think it's completely okay to go for that upside because Foden plays Sheffield United. I mean, why not jump in this week?
Yeah, and Mbeumo is a good fixture. You could argue Matoma the same if you don't have these guys. It's a tough one. I think I would hold Rashford and possibly sell Bruno. I'm encouraged by those Nottingham Forest defensive numbers too, as you mentioned. Like game week one, Forest went to Arsenal. Arsenal put up under 1xG, which is so rare for them at the Emirates. And Forest have been historically so bad on the road last season. Hey, we clearly love XG, Praz. I'm sure I've mentioned it a few times, as you have. But it's an interesting stat to always look at, the XG conceded. And Forest clearly have upped their game defensively. So it'll be really interesting to see at Old Trafford. The United attack hasn't been firing. But again, going back to the expected data against Spurs, they hit over two. You know, They were really unfortunate. And it was Bruno that was involved in so many of those big chances, either as a creator or as a finisher. He just hasn't found his radar, has he, this season?
Yeah, and this is the other side of the coin, which is if you wanted to make a case for holding Man United players for the long term, I think it's fine because this underlying data tells us that the goals will come. They are creating a lot of chances. In fact, nobody has better attacking stats than Bruno Fernandes in the first two game weeks. Obviously, he has nothing to show for it. But that's the reality. So you could make an argument that, look, I'm going to hold. Hoyland may come back next game week, or Martial is also now fit. So they will have that pivot in attack, which is really missing. And that pivot in attack helps Rashford as well, because, you know, as a team shape, Man United tend to be a little bit lopsided towards the left. All the attack comes from that left side with Shaw and usually Rashford. So you'd think that if that attacker comes in, it helps both Bruno and Rashford. So if people wanted to sort of exercise patience, I think it's absolutely fine. Man United hasn't become a bad team overnight. And I think if you wanted to hold them, they're pretty much until game week 8, they've got good fixtures apart from maybe this Arsenal away.
Rashford on the left is so much better as an FPL option though, isn't he? Like, we just want to see Rashford wide and we want to see him facing the goal. We want to see him running at defenders rather than having to be the number nine where he's often got his back to goal and holding the ball up. I remember a Mourinho interview a few years back where he said, Rashford, amazing to work with, great player, but he'll never be an elite number nine. And look, he doesn't need to be an elite number nine to score a ton of goals. We've seen him scoring so many goals when he's played wide. And I'm really excited to hopefully see Rashford playing wide again. We might not see it from game week 3, but fingers crossed we do from 3-4 onwards. And that's why I want Rashford as a long-term hold, I think, because I know how good he is when he's in the right position. Let's move on to the team that beat United, Praz, Spurs, because again, under Ange Postecoglou, pretty impressive. Like, I didn't think we'd see clean sheets with this Spurs team so early. They've already clocked a clean sheet, but in attack, they look loads of fun. Even with no Harry Kane, chances are plenty. But I guess the underperformer so far in that team is Richarlison at 7 million, listed as a midfielder, playing number nine. We all were eyeing up Richarlison from game week 3 onwards, and now we're probably not making that move, but it hasn't settled for him yet, has it?
It hasn't, and actually, there's a little bit of a dichotomy with Spurs, right? I mean, we think they're very attacking. We're seeing the shot volume, but the problem is the goals have come from Sarr, Romero, an own goal from Martinez. So the actual goal creation has, you know, Madison is sort of central and he's creating a lot of these goals, but who is actually putting the ball in the net? We don't know yet. Son's not putting his hand up. Kulusevski is not pulling his hand up. And as you said, Richarlison isn't either. So I feel like we need to see another couple of game weeks, unless you're going for a fit Madison. And you know, we should say on this pod, we don't yet know the result of his scan. You know, he did come off the stadium on crutches and, you know, it was precautionary. That's what he said. But you just have to monitor with these things. So once we know, you know that Madison will be the chance creator. He will be in bonus, possibly on penalties. We don't know that either. But that's where I'm a little bit open in terms of where I go with Spurs. I can see myself going for Son, Richarlison, Madison, or even Kulusevski if sort of things align in the right way.
Yeah. And at the back, Adoji is a 4.5 defender. We know from his time in Italy at Udinese, like, he is very good at getting forward and he's a threat, both an assist threat, but also a goal threat. And at set pieces, he's always involved. So he'll go up and he'll win headers. I think he maybe scored a header pre-season, you know, from a corner. So again, there's upside with him. And the reason I didn't buy Adoji game week one and I was considering it was purely I didn't expect clean sheets from Spurs. But obviously they've put up a clean sheet already. And now the fixtures have turned a little bit. I think I might expect a clean sheet or two. And he looks loads of fun. Definitely on my radar as a maybe even the standout 4.5 defender in the game. Although there's Botman, there's Colwill, there's the Villa lads. But definitely on my radar if I want to make a transfer in that category. And we don't often make transfers for 4.5 million defenders, because we often want to use them for our more exciting upside picks. But I think there's loads of upside there.
I do.
We've got to talk about penalties, Praz, because we don't know who's on pens for Spurs. But we have found out over the weekend who's on them at Arsenal, who's on them at Chelsea, who's on them at Villa. Even with Salah, there's now a question mark over him. But should we start with Saka? Because that was a bit of a surprise, I think. I know he's missed a couple, but we didn't expect that, did we?
There were some murmurs after the Community Shield. You know, how well Odegaard took his penalty, the fact that he was the first one to take the penalty over Saka. But then Saka missed for England and then he stepped up for Arsenal. So it never bothered Saka not being on pens. But even now, you know, Arteta after the match said, I didn't know that the guys, you know, who was going to take the penalty, the guys decided between themselves. So I wouldn't say we know now 100% that Odegaard is on penalties, which makes it a lot harder for us to pick a player. Because even though, you know, some people will say Saka got two penalties last season, he was still a great FPL asset. It's the fact that you have that upside bonus of penalties that you can rely on. I mean, look at Mbeumo, look at João Pedro. There's players that you can just get that upside and sort of get ahead just because these guys are on penalties than the others, competitors who are not. I would have liked Saka on penalties because his, again, back to underlying data, attacking data, it was similar to Odegaard. What separated him from Odegaard was the pens. So,
and Martinelli.
You can now argue that it's the reverse.
Yeah, I think the Arteta post-match comments, I'm not sure I believe. It could be a mind game from Arteta. Like, this is Pep 2.0. Is he really... The level of detail we see from Arteta, and we've seen it from various bits of TV, from the documentary and stuff, like, he knows who's on pens. Of course he does. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But it's an interesting take there from Arteta post-match. But look, one guy that we were happy who wasn't on penalties, even as an owner, was Ollie Watkins. So I own Ollie Watkins. And genuinely, when I saw he didn't have the pen but had won the assist... This is probably the only player in the league I'd be celebrating that is in my team that's been taken off penalties was Ollie Watkins, because his record is poor and you just fear straight away minus points. And then obviously if you miss your pen, you're not getting bonus either. So the fact he clocked the 3 points for the assist instead of the 4 points for the goal, I was very happy with that. So Watkins off pens isn't necessarily a bad thing, although I say that with a, you know, take that with a pinch of salt.
I think for that one particular incident, I can get the relief that you get the 3 points anyway for the assist. But I think over long term, if he's not going to be on penalties, which I think it's quite clear because even John McGinn after the game said, you know, he was also practicing penalties. And so it seems like, you know, it's Douglas Lewis number one, John McGinn number two, and then Ollie Watkins. And he does have a terrible record. You know, it's not a Saka situation. It's even worse than that. But I think, you know, unless you were missing 50% of your penalties, you still want your player to take penalties. Because over the long term, if he scores 6 out of 10, you still make more points than not. I guess it is what it is, and we need to factor that in his price, because 8 million is still a decent price for Watkins. And when the fixtures turn after game week 8, I think a lot will still go for him regardless.
Yeah, 100% with you on that. Just looking at some of the stats for penalty takers at Liverpool, because again, I wonder how long Mo Salah's going to be on penalties. Like, I know he's the main man of that club and I know he's not going to give them up. But knowing McAllister and Szoboszlai have got such good records, Szoboszlai has scored 15 from 16, right? 94% conversion rate. McAllister scored 9 from 10. This is in their pro career, 90% conversion rate. Salah's scored 32 from 40. So he's 80% in terms of his conversion. So not bad, but just not up there with McAllister and Szoboszlai. And it was another miss at the weekend. He, of course, got the rebound. So it wasn't a complete nightmare for FPL managers, but it'll be really interesting to monitor. I don't think we can necessarily now count on Salah being on pens. I think it's more likely than not, but we shouldn't bank on that, a bit like we couldn't bank on Watkins and Saka.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's talk about Enzo when we come to Chelsea, but let's finish the Arsenal discussion. How you feel about defenders? I mean, Zinchenko is now back. I think we need to talk about, as a Gabriel owner, are you patient? Because, you know, there is a school of thought that said that because Zinchenko was out, he needed Partey on the right-hand side of defense to invert. Once Zinchenko comes back, they will revert to the Zinchenko, Saliba, Gabriel, White, where Zinchenko is the one inverting from the left. So Gabriel can basically come back into the team. You have faith in any of that, or you're done?
I don't know. I thought I had faith on the fact that Gabriel would come in because Timber was out. And I know Zinchenko perhaps wasn't ready to start, but Thomas Partey played well on the right on Monday night. And because of that, I wonder if he'll want Partey and Zinchenko inverting. Probably not. And with that in mind, could he go Kivior as the left back? You just don't know. And I think even if Gabriel starts versus Fulham, yeah, we might take our points and be happy. But then how long is it until he's back out the team? Clearly, what we've seen in game week 1-2 is Arteta wants to experiment with Ben White more centrally. Perhaps he likes Ben White's passing more than Gabriel's. And he's up for playing Partey as a right back, because obviously Declan Rice's addition has meant that there's no route to the 11 easily for Partey unless he's going to play with two sort of holding mids. So with all that in mind, I think as a long-term pick, Gabriel's a sell, regardless if he plays versus Fulham or not. So as an owner, I think I'll be jumping ship. However, I've got Colwell as my first sub, who's got Luton at home. So maybe that's not a priority transfer for me. But do I see myself putting him in my 11? Probably not. But he might spend some time on my bench, because I just can't be safe. What we know with Gabriel, and Arteta likes to do this, when Arsenal are winning in tight games, we saw it a lot last season. I remember Rob Holding coming off the bench a few times.
The five symbol he makes that we're going five at the back.
Yeah, you see it all the time. I remember before, when I heard the news Gabriel wasn't starting game week one and game week two, both times I tweeted to be like, he'll come off the bench if Arsenal were winning in a tight game. And obviously at 80 minutes, it was a tight game. Arsenal were winning both times. And look what happened. Gabriel comes off the bench. Even without that red card for Tomiyasu, he comes off the bench. So the fear of the one-pointer is still there versus Fulham. So I think he'll be either sold or my first sub, and I'll just go for someone I know that's nailed in Colwell.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. And speaking of Colwell, talk to us about Chelsea. How are you feeling about that result and Enzo on pens, and so much to talk about actually from that game?
Oh man, I mean, we said this game week was a bit of a roller coaster with ups and downs. It always is with FPL, but try being a Chelsea fan. I mean, what a roller coaster journey that game was, because for the majority of the first half, it's the best we've seen Chelsea play for a while. And Chelsea score that penalty and they go 2-1 up, and then it looks quite comfortable. West Ham score their goal out of nowhere from a set piece, and there was a warning. And look, with James Ward-Prowse, by the way, he'll get lots of assists at West Ham from set pieces, because West Ham are a big team that the likes of Zouma and co are always going to put their head on James Ward-Prowse set pieces.
Absolutely.
But disappointed from Chelsea, and naive defending to concede the goal, but looking good in attack. And the Chucky goal was so good, and his injury is going to have big implications, because with no Nkunku as well, with Chelsea are definitely lacking a creator. But it was good to see Raheem Sterling step up. I thought he had a poor start to the game, but then was really, really good and really bright. And he could be a nice differential going into a brilliant run of games for Chelsea. And sure, Jackson continued to miss chances. He had one really big chance, the header from the Chilwell cross, which was disappointing. But I feel like Jackson's being judged a little bit too early by some on social, saying, you know, he's a really poor finisher. We've only seen him play two games. He's a young lad in a new league. What I've seen from Jackson is the chances are still coming his way. He works really hard. He's still the focal point of the attack. And I saw the preseason games where his finishing was actually really good and he scored goals. So I'm still confident going into game week 3 and 4 that Jackson's going to score, and genuinely considering buying him despite the blanks we've seen so far. The thing that puts me off buying Jackson is, do Chelsea dip into that transfer market to buy another attacking player? And who is that attacking player, and will they play number 9 and compete with Jackson? So again, I'll be leaving the decision right up into the deadline. And obviously the transfer window is going to be open after game week 3. So there's a little bit of a risk in that move. But for the time being, I still think Chelsea are very much a team we can invest in, purely based on the fixtures and the fact that we've seen some good displays whilst we haven't seen good results. And the second half against West Ham was poor, admittedly. But I still think a clean sheet is more likely than not in the next couple of game weeks.
Completely with you. I think people are surprised on why there is so much Chelsea love when they've got 1 point in the first two games.
Yeah.
It's the next three: Luton at home, Nottingham Forest at home, and Bournemouth away. They could not be a better block of three fixtures for any team across 38 game weeks than this three. So you have to decide how much you want to invest in it. Could it backfire? Absolutely. I mean, maybe Jackson misses a couple of chances, taken off early. Chilwell gets an early sub again. Anything could happen with Chelsea, but it's a logical punt. And at this stage of the season, these are cheap assets. And if you can maneuver with your two free transfers to get at least two Chelsea players, I think you have to try to go for it. And I'm similar in terms of Jackson. I mean, I've got João Pedro in my team. I left money in the bank to get Jackson by game week 3. And so I'm fairly certain that I'm going to do that. Nothing's changed in my view there. And yeah, I mean, the other talking point was Chilwell was taken off on the 60th minute. I think a lot of people were talking about Chukwuemeka coming off and then Mudryk coming on instead. And Mudryk basically takes up the same spaces as Chilwell. So he took off Chilwell for that. Do you expect that to be a thing now that Chukwuemeka is out or not?
It's a really interesting one. I think Mudryk definitely will get more minutes. And with that in mind, do we see Chilwell more as a left back? Because Colwill played left back against West Ham. And that could definitely limit Chilwell's attacking threat. But Mudryk can change flank if he needs to. Like, I wonder if we'll see some experimenting with Sterling playing a little bit more centrally and even Mudryk getting some minutes on the right. But it's the Chelsea injuries have really hampered their attacking threat, but also for the likes of Chilwell, who's obviously the main FPL asset at Chelsea, with Chukwuemeka and Nkunku out and therefore Mudryk more likely to get minutes. There's no doubt in my mind that might limit Chilwell's output. I don't think it will necessarily limit Chilwell's minutes. He will be the standing captain for James. I don't think we'll see too many early subs. I think that was more game state and the addition of Mudryk coming into that team and not having that full tactical setup in place because it's a sub halfway through a game. But going into game week 3, if Mudrick's in the 11, I would expect there to be a plan to still get the best out of Chilwell and Mudryk because Poch will want his best players on the pitch. And Chilwell is one of Chelsea's best and certainly most dangerous players. Interesting school of thought with Enzo as well. Like, we know he's on set pieces now. We know with the addition of Lavia and Caicedo, there could be a world where both those DMs are playing and Enzo is given much more attacking responsibility.
Yeah.
And I wonder, as a 5 million FPL asset, if he's still on penalties, how good he'll be as an FPL option. When you're a new penalty taker and you miss the first one, it's not great, but you would expect him still to be given the second. I don't think you miss one and you're off straight away.
Yeah.
So Enzo is also on my radar, but I want to see the formation Chelsea set up with. I want to see if Lavia and Caicedo play together or if it's one of them plus Enzo. And then maybe by game week 4, we're looking at that third Chelsea asset. Do we go 3 Chelsea assets for game week 3? I'm not sure. I am tempted. I own Colwill Chilwell and I am tempted to jump on Jackson. But it does mean selling Ollie Watkins, who I don't really want to part with. But look, you can't have more than 15 players in this game. It's not me saying Watkins is a bad pick. It's me saying I just prefer Jackson for the fixtures he's got. I think Watkins has got Burnley away and Liverpool away versus Jackson with 2 good home fixtures.
Correct. I'm with you. It is about playing the fixtures. It's nothing to do with Watkins. I mean, one last point on Chelsea that we should talk about is a 4.0 million gem on Gusto. What are your thoughts? I mean, obviously he's come in. Mm-hmm. Now, James's injury, you know, Pochettino said it's a few weeks. We don't know what that is. It could be the first international break. It could be longer. And Gusto played decently. I mean, he got a few minutes. I think he made one wrong pass the whole game. Other than that, his pass completion was really good. He did a good job for a 4 million. So could people look at that as a Gabriel replacement, especially if it's your fourth defender and you can even afford to bench Gusto if you want later?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's certainly the standout 4 million pick. But if money isn't an issue, and for many managers, money doesn't seem to be too tight, if you can spend the extra 0.5, you go for the long-term pick of Colwill. Colwill's going to start most games, we think, right? We know as soon as Reece James is fit, Gusto's out the team. But then we also know James will probably get injured again and Gusto comes in. But with Colwill, you can just have a set and forget. So I do prefer the security of minutes. In terms of output, there's not a huge amount between them. Like, you think Gusto's a little bit more advanced. And I looked at the average position this morning and slightly more advanced than Colwill, Gusto on the right-hand side. But Colwill has better underlying numbers, so we'll do slightly better in the bonus point system and probably more of a goal threat. And I think we'll see Colwill win some headers at corners. And pre-season, he could have scored a couple at the back post from Chelsea corners. And even against West Ham, I think he got into the right, he got his head on one or two. So you get the goal threat from Colwill, the assist threat from Gusto, but you get the assurance of minutes with Colwill too. So if you can afford the extra, whilst Gusto as a standalone pick is absolutely fine, I think Colwill's an even better pick.
Let's go to Brighton. So Brighton, I mean, what a team. I mean, 4+ goals, both first 2 games. Amazing in attack. We've got a defender who's attacking, which is a rare commodity, as we talked about. Where are you? You've got Mitoma and Estupiñan, right?
Praz, 2 things I said pre-season, which I didn't follow through with, which I'm really disappointed in myself with, was you've got to have a Man City defender because they're the best defence in the league. And I had John Stones, to be fair, but I sold him ahead of the deadline. And then the other one was you need more than one Brighton attacker because they're one of the best attacks in the league. And look at their fixtures and look at their price points. But I couldn't squeeze double Brighton attack in. So I ended up with just Mitoma. Sure, I've got Estupiñan. You could argue I've got double Brighton attack, but should have had 2 attacking players. And I watched them play, and I just, you know, you look at Solly March at the weekend just gone. We saw glimpses of João Pedro in game week one, and then Ciso in game week two. If we think our guys are nailed for minutes, then double Brighton attack plus Estupinan would have made complete sense. Now the fixtures are about to turn a little bit, so maybe you don't want to commit there. But I think this is a team that will create huge chances against tough opposition. They will have a go against anyone. Yeah. So if you can accommodate March and Matoma, for example, I think that's a very, very legit option, and one that I wish I had done game week one. But they're just a joy to watch. No matter who's on the pitch, the team plays the same way. And that's what I love. This team isn't about individuals. It's about the system and the manager. So Enciso can come in for João Pedro and you don't lose anything. And that does make Enciso and João Pedro and Ferguson and Welbeck slightly riskier picks. But the two that we think will play every week, even when Europe starts, as long as they're good and then they're not in that kind of red zone for needing a rest, Matoma March.
Yeah.
And we saw it last season, and we saw it again in game week two. What a joy they are.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. And I think the only fear is this European rotation, because last year, back end of last year, when Brighton had a lot of midweek games, we saw that De Zerbi became prime Pep, where he was rotating in mass. I mean, nobody was spared. Matoma, McAllister, March. So I think the honeymoon period is until game week five, which is when they have decent fixtures and they don't have midweek football. And it will be after that where it gets a little bit tricky. I think with March, a lot of people didn't go for him game week one because there was these rumors really badly timed where they were going to sign Kudus, who's also right forward. And so people just went for Matoma as default. But I think if they don't sign one, March is equally good. And in the central spot, like you mentioned, I think between Pedro and Enciso, they'll share minutes. Between Welbeck and Ferguson, they'll share minutes. I think eventually, as the season progresses, you might see a first choice. Maybe that's Ferguson and Pedro, but we just don't know. So you got to take the slice, what you get. And I think with these good fixtures, a lot of people have got a lot of points.
I'm struggling with the European fixtures coming in to know what De Zerbi's going to do. Because historically, when we see English teams in the Europa League or the Europa Conference League, early on in the group stages, they very much put out often a kind of second string team. And we've seen that in years gone by with Spurs, for example. And even at times, look at West Ham's run last year, early on, it was a lot of the kind of second string players. But for a team like Brighton that haven't had European football before, I believe, it's a big deal. And for De Zerbi, Italian managers historically take European competition that's not the Champions League still really seriously, probably more seriously than some in the Premier League and English managers. So with that in mind, I'm like, is De Zerbi going to go full strength early on? Because it's a big deal for Brighton. But at the same time, the priority you'd still think would be the Premier League. And there is a big squad there. And we look at some of the attacking players that you think might get minutes. And there's Andringa who can play on the left. There's Buonanotte on the right. And Enciso will get minutes. You know, Ferguson hasn't been starting in the Premier League. So he can still put out a really exciting 11 with some of the core players that, you know, you think Duncan Webster, fine, they can play but twice a week. But some of those attacking players, I actually do think early on he'll probably rotate. Mm. And therefore, March Matoma maybe stay fresh, relatively fresh. But it'll be a really interesting to monitor. And after one or two European group stage games, we'll know a little bit more. You can probably say similar for Aston Villa too.
Agreed. I mean, but that's the thing. And this comes to the core of what we need to discuss in Brighton is also the time when they play Man United away, Newcastle at home, Liverpool at home, Man City away, all before game week nine. So while we all know that De Zerbi will continue to attack, Brighton will continue to create chances, a difficult fixture is a difficult fixture at the end of the day. So this is where I am a little bit more skeptical in terms of will I be playing Estupinan every single game or will I bench him in a couple, again, especially against Man City and Liverpool at home, because I do expect those teams to score. And so this is where people need to sort of forward think and say, am I going to be sitting there in game week nine and say, okay, I need to sell Estupinan or I need to have a fourth defender that I can play instead, or I don't care and I think it's a great team and I'm going to play them instead. There's no right answer, but you need to have that in mind so that you think about who your defender replacements are now so that you have a substitute in case, for example, me, I don't want to play Estupinan in those games. So my fourth defender won't be a 4 million Gusto. It'll be somebody better who I can rely on those fixtures when Brighton have the tougher games.
Yeah, that looking ahead nature is so, so important. What about Liverpool, Praz? We've got to speak Liverpool and we've got to speak a bit about Brentford before the end of the show. So Liverpool, Salah penalty misses, that I guess one of the headlines, but Also, the share of points up top for Liverpool, like Diaz and Jota in and amongst it, you'd take penalties away from Salah and you're not getting great data. And then the lack of clean sheets just continues, doesn't it? Like, it, many of us went against Trent early on, and I think this is why there's no assurance of clean sheets at Liverpool anymore.
They need a number six. I mean, if you're looking at clean sheets, I mean, you can't lose a Fabinho and a Henderson, not replace them, and then expect the same. And I know they've got McAllister and Szoboszlai, who are great midfielders, but they're not number sixes. So you need somebody to shield that defense, which was already, you know, to an extent aging. I'm going to say Robertson, Van Dijk, you know, they are getting over. And it's a team that needs shielding because the wingers and the attackers give away the ball a lot because they're all dribblers. They're not the Man City wingers where they control the ball and they do not lose it. So they just give up a lot of chances, which is why, you know, Trent becomes a little bit of a difficult one. And for those that had him, you know, maybe it's time to look elsewhere, given that the fixtures anyway are not easy until game week 8. So, yeah, I think with Liverpool, they're a wait and see until game week 8. If people have Salah and they have other fires to put out, it's nothing wrong to keep Salah as well. But I think if you wanted to be aggressive and now use those funds, you know, you can, for example, go Salah to a Foden, which nobody has, and you can upgrade your attacker to a Jackson, which not many people have, or get Trippier in defense. There's a lot you can do with that money and be different again. You don't have to keep Salah to be different.
Yeah, I think I'd be selling Salah, which sounds like you probably don't need the money, but I think you can probably do a lot with the money if you're creative with it. And when I look at some of the 6.5 million midfielders that are delivering, and then you put Foden in the mix, and then, you know, should you want a Spurs midfielder come game week 4, selling Salah's an absolutely fine option. I think that's where I'm at. I don't think we need Liverpool for this period. I actually think if you want to punt on a Liverpool attacking player, save the money and go Jota. I think Jota's been playing really well and getting the chances, playing as the number 9. But remember, he can play on the left. And if Darwin had been coming off the bench and really impressing, we'd be worried. But I can't see Klopp changing Jota for a few games. Sure, if he has a few bad games, he'll come out because they've got that strength and depth. But for the time being, I think Jota is a nice, fun pick. And Diaz is playing well too. They're certainly matching Salah at the moment. And we should probably turn our attention to two men at Brentford who are just impressing up front, and that's Bomo and Vissa. Like, Brentford changed the formation at the weekend, Praz. I saw they went 4-3-3, and as soon as I saw that pre-match, I was like, as a non-owner from Bomo, I was like, this is slightly better. Because when they play with wing-backs in a 3-5-2, he's that little bit closer to the goal and that little bit more central. But even in Bomo playing in a 4-3-3, still gets the points. And it's not just penalties. Like, he's got the highest XG of all midfielders in the game, in game week 1 and 2, non-penalty XG, so you take, you know, the penalties out of the mix, he's on 1.68, higher than everyone else, and he's on penalties and he scored 2 penalties. Like, he seems like the best player in the game at the moment, and someone I haven't got, and I'm scrambling around thinking, how can I accommodate him? He's been so good.
He's been very good. And I'm a happy owner, but I also acknowledge that, you know, getting 2 pens in 2 games is lucky. So yes, you do make your luck by picking penalty takers, but, you know, Bruno didn't get any. So this is why we're talking about selling Bruno. So, you know, penalties do skew our perception a little bit. But yeah, he missed a huge chance in the first game. And then he put one away in the second one, which was by the end of the game, I think 4th minute in extra time. So you get points for players who play 90 minutes and are on penalties. And I think Mbeumo is a great option. And the great thing is he's got 2 excellent home games coming up. And I think his fixtures are great until game week 8. And this was my thinking when I was actually debating between Mitoma and Mbeumo, which was a 50-50. So there was no right answer. But what I had in my head is I don't mind keeping this player until my first wild card. So I'm going to go for the guy who has better fixtures longer term. It turns out he delivered more than Mitoma even in the first 2 game weeks. But it's just one of those things where I think both are great players. And I can even see a case of having 2 6.5 midfielders going forward at some point.
Yeah, because we haven't even spoken about, I guess, in that bracket, we mentioned March earlier, but Eze, who has blanked in game week 1 and 2, but we know is a really good pick. And even on Monday night against Arsenal, you can just see he's everything for that Palace team. And again, has that penalty appeal with no Zaha. And when the Palace fixtures are better, I think we'll look at Eze and think, it's another 6.5 million midfielder we probably want to try and accommodate. Definitely the combination of having a midfield 5, I think, in terms of formation has been the optimal formation, if you like. Like, there's a big argument pre-season because of João Pedro to consider 3 forwards. But the way the midfielders are playing at the moment, the way there's so many good options, I think 5 mids is still the preferred formation. And would you agree with that, Praz?
Absolutely. I think we all need to get used to the feeling of having FOMO with five midfielders we don't own, despite owning five others, yeah. because there's about 11, you know, 10 to 15 great midfielders in the game who are all well priced. Yeah. And at every point, we will feel, I don't have Foden, or I don't have Eze, or I don't have Madison, and you just can't have them all. So it is what it is. You need to sort of play the fixtures and have the right midfielders at the right time, but also acknowledge that, you know, if others are scoring points, you just couldn't have all of them. So that's just what it is.
Yeah, I think I'm with you in that. With your final thoughts, Praz, for the game week, like, both of us have those two free transfers. Are you thinking you'll use them both, or you'll use one? Obviously, if you don't use one, you lose it. So you've got to use one transfer.
Correct.
I'm thinking there's a chance I just make that one move, and then I keep that extra transfer banked. And remember, when you have two transfers, don't feel the need to use them both. It's a nice position to be in, to be able to always have that additional transfer banked and ready, just in case you get an injury or a suspension.
100%. I think if people will look at their teams on the FPL page, they will realize that actually their teams, you know, their players are playing great fixtures. And so you don't need to be forced into another player with another good fixture, because you may now may not get that upside. So I think my strategy is the same as yours, where I will do one transfer, which is João Pedro to Jackson or Alvarez. I'm still open. And that'll be it, because I'll keep that money for maybe moving around the Man United mids or the Arsenal mids next game week, once their fixtures turn, they actually play each other. And maybe those two fixtures or two free transfers will work out a lot better then.
Yeah, yeah. Praz, I've loved chatting with you. I'm delighted that we'll be on the Off the Bench podcast a few times together this season. And hopefully when we next come on, we're both on juicy green arrows.
Likewise, man. Likewise. Really looking forward to it. And yeah, look, game week two was full of goals. There was penalty drama. And for FPL managers, many of whom are on two free transfers, there are some big decisions to be made. Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back on Thursday with the FPL pod. They'll be looking ahead to Game Week 3 and thinking about what managers should do with their transfers ahead of the Friday deadline. And don't forget, if you haven't already done so, join the FPL pod league for the new season. The code is IB3WLK. Good luck in Game Week 3, everyone.
See you later.